The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. We are back at Edstone, a beautiful time of year. The leaves are changing colors, and, well, here on campus, so many of them are beginning to fall already. We're coming up to the time change, by the way, and if you have been listening to the program over the past year, you probably remember that it's a little bit staggered for us, a couple of weeks each year in the fall and then again in the spring. Next week, the time change happens here in the UK, but not in the United States, or this weekend, I guess I should say. So for those of you listening on the continent, in Europe, here in the UK, it'll be an earlier program next week, an hour earlier. Each day the program will start at noon here in the UK, or in the Netherlands, for example, it'll be at 1 o'clock instead of 2, so that we can keep with the time in the United States. So next week it'll be staggered, and then the week after that we'll be right back to normal. But for those of you that listen in the U.S., don't worry, it'll be at the same time as you're accustomed to. Well, as I say, the leaves are changing, the season is changing, and we're glad to be back here at Edstone after a couple of weeks in the States. I spent some time in Florida, and also, as you heard earlier this week from our headquarters campus in Edmond, Oklahoma, we were there for about a week as well. While traveling yesterday, Brent Nachtigall sat in for me, his show on the United Nations attempt to erase 1,000 years of Jewish history in Jerusalem. That's now available on the website. You can go to thetrumpet.com or to kpcg.fm if you'd like to listen to Brent's program from yesterday. If you'd like to email the show, send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. Coming up in the second segment, we'll be getting through quite a few of the emails that have been coming in again this week. After a little bit of a dry spell, well, we were running a few repeats over about a week and a half. So we'll look forward to getting into some of those emails in just a little bit. Well, the latest Trumpet magazine, this is the last issue of the year, the November-December issue. The cover headline says, "How Europe Will Unite Again." Many of you listeners have probably already received this particular issue of the Trumpet, and some of the material in it, we had been compiling it before our break over the last couple of weeks, so some of it we've gone through on this program. But it just struck me all the more so today, just seeing everything collected together, all these topics, these stories, in one issue of the Trumpet magazine. And what a perspective it gives to you, the reader, to all of us, what a perspective it gives to us on the real significance of events in this world today. How Europe will unite again. I mean, who else is talking about this, particularly in the United States? We were there, as I say, for a couple of weeks. I happened to see the third debate. I guess that's now a week and a half ago. But that was the first debate of the three that I've been able to see live, because we were there in the States. And then when you see what the American news media are consumed with, particularly in trying to bring down Donald Trump, it just strikes me as I go through this latest issue. This is the last issue of the Trumpet that we'll have before the U.S. election on November the 8th. And yet you can go through one article after another. There's not very much in there about the U.S. election. I think there's one article by Brad McDonald that has a passing reference to Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. But outside of that, I mean, you really do get You really do get God's perspective on what's happening in the world. So many in the United States are losing sight of this because of their obsession with political candidates or with a political election. How Europe will unite again. My father has a piece in there leading off the issue on the spirit of Charlemagne, how it's alive and well in Europe. And in that article, he talks about Napoleon's rule from a couple of centuries ago. And, of course, Charlemagne, you have to go back 1,200 years. And how that today people romanticize these reigns of Napoleon and Charlemagne. They forget about all the bloodshed and the violence. They forget about the bloody history of these reigns. My father says it's much more difficult to forget about Adolf Hitler. His Nazi death machine sparked a world war and murdered by the millions. His horrific rule, he writes, is much more recent. In many ways, he committed some of the worst atrocities in human history. And it happened during the lifetimes of many of us. These are facts, or rather, these facts are well known. And Hitler's still reviled today. What's less well known is that Adolf Hitler was the leader of the Holy Roman Empire, just like Napoleon, just like Charlemagne. My father says Adolf Hitler came in the spirit of Charlemagne. And so many people see those atrocities. It's so recent. And yet we go back a little bit further, Napoleon, for example, and we romanticize it. We glorify it. Same with Charlemagne. And we see the spirit of Charlemagne alive and well in Europe today. It's being resurrected. Brad McDonald has a piece in this same issue. This looks like a job for Superman. He talks in that piece about how politics abhors a vacuum. You might remember we went through, again, some of the material before our break with just the relative stability that you've seen in German politics since the end of World War II. And yet we look at Angela Merkel's administration today coming under fire. Politics abhors a vacuum, Brad McDonald writes. The greater the number and intensity of the crises, the stronger the desire for someone with real solutions. And then again, he gets into some important history here. This is exactly the scenario that facilitated the rise of Adolf Hitler and the Nazi Party. Compared to his Weimar counterparts, Hitler was energetic, passionate, and urgent. He came with what seemed to be practical, rational solutions, and he appeared to genuinely care about Germany. Brad McDonald says by 1933, the public's frustration and anxiety was so intense and its hunger for better leadership so acute that many Germans ignored Hitler's sociopathic traits and instead embraced him as a Superman who would soothe their anxieties and restore stability and order. I mean, this is the kind of history that you need to be reading and hearing about. But you don't see much about it coming from the news media today. Certainly not in the United States. Richard Palmer has an article in this same issue, the November-December Trumpet magazine, about Europe rediscovering its Christian identity. People can look at Europe today and scoff at the thought of it returning to its roots. And yet, as Richard Palmer brings out here, it's only a matter of time before a new Napoleon steps up. You get an idea of the theme that runs through this issue. Charlemagne, Napoleon, the sixth resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire under the rule of Hitler. History's repeating itself. Well, Richard Palmer talks about the Christian religion in Europe, how in the North it's largely Protestant, in the South it's Catholic, in the East it's the Orthodox, but yet, he goes through the prophecies and how that's going to unite under the leadership of the Vatican. And then that woman is going to guide the beast, as it says in Revelation 17. There's more history discussed in another article from this same Trumpet magazine, how dangerous ideas crumbled France in 6 weeks. Talking, obviously, about World War II, the early days of the Second World War. Kieran Underwood wrote, "Men have an extraordinary ability to ignore danger and an alarming willingness to follow the intellectuals of the day, no matter how misguided. How dangerous it is to turn a blind eye to, in the case of World War II, German aggression, the rise of the Nazi war machine, the dangers of pacifism." That's what Kieran discusses in his piece. Well, there's quite a few other articles very much worth reading in this latest issue of The Trumpet about Syria's strongman, Assad. Europe's timeline for building a military. We covered that extensively before our break. Ethiopia on the brink. How does that factor into prophecy? There's a little blurb in this issue about North Korea testing another nuke. And yet with no consequences. The Philippines and China. Here's an alliance in the making. And of course, we've got more on the race riots that flare up, it seems, every few weeks in the United States. It's building. It's building to an Ezekiel 5 type clash, city to city. As I say, you look at this whole issue of The Trumpet in its entirety. Here it is, the last issue before the U.S. election on November the 8th. And really, there's nothing much to speak of in this issue about Donald Trump or about Hillary Clinton. Not that those topics aren't worth covering. But look at what's dominating the news cycle. In the United States, Glenn Reynolds had a piece in the USA Today from, I think, 2 days ago. The headline is, "Talking about Trump's sex life lets us avoid reality." Look at the front page of the New York Times over these next several days leading up to November the 8th. And you'll see what most are talking about. And yet, look at the reality. Well, Reynolds, in his piece, talks mainly about topics that at least should be getting coverage in the United States. But he doesn't really even get into some of the things I just rattled off there from our latest Trumpet. But notice what he says here. "Obamacare is imploding because the original concept was unworkable. As many critics argued at the time it was adopted. Now, several years later, insurers are abandoning the project, and Americans' premiums are facing double-digit increases." That's the reality. And, I mean, this is President Obama's signature legislation. And as Reynolds brings out, given the fact that Hillary Clinton is running to essentially extend the Obama presidency for another term, these are the kinds of things you would think would be making headlines. It's imploding, Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. It's imploding. And you had Josh Earnest, I think it was just yesterday or the day before, talking about how the administration is doing everything that it can to try to get young people to sign up as opposed to taking the penalty. I think the penalty now is $700 a year. And so many of the young people that are supposed to fund this project are opting for the penalty. They don't want to get the affordable care, quote unquote. So they're taking the financial hit. And the government's urging them, saying, look, Why not sign up for the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare instead of paying that penalty? Well, too many of the young people are not signing up. And so the whole program is imploding. Reynolds says corruption, unaffordable health care, a burgeoning national debt. These are all things that will have serious consequences for Americans for decades to come. In a healthier society, notice this, in a healthier society, our election would turn on these issues. But we don't live in such a society. And that suits politicians and their supporters in the press just fine. And so the obsession, no doubt, for the next 10, 12 days will continue with Donald Trump's sex life, with who Donald Trump might have offended 10, 15 years ago. And again, none of this is meant to justify his previous or past behavior. But the title, there's a lot to be said for the title of Glenn Reynolds' piece. We're avoiding reality. I mean, last week you had a Russian flotilla that was just moving its way right through the English Channel, right past Dover, the white cliffs of Dover. 8 Russian naval vessels cutting through the English Channel en route to the Eastern Mediterranean so that they could join the onslaught going on there in Syria. And some, as it happens, I mean, here's this audacious move by Putin, the Russian Navy. And yet some, even here in Britain, were looking at images of this Russian aircraft carrier, an old one, I guess, from the Soviet era, as its massive diesel engines were spewing out black smoke as it moved through the English Channel. And there were commentators here in the UK and in Europe that were poking fun at Russia because of this old aircraft carrier. But I think the proper response to that kind of response came from Con Coughlin, who said in his piece, "Don't laugh at Vladimir Putin's rusty navy. At least the Russians have an aircraft carrier." That's quite a dig at the UK. At least they have one. And as it happens, it helped itself to come right through the English Channel. That was just last week. Coughlin says Moscow's illegal annexation of territory in Georgia and Ukraine, as well as its brutal assault on rebel forces in Syria, are all part of Mr. Putin's plan to reestablish Russia as a major player on the world stage. So we've gone through many of these developments before, but it's a good summary here in Coughlin's piece. It says, and with America transfixed, notice again, with America transfixed by the horror show that the current presidential election contest has become, who is to say the opportunistic Mr. Putin might not be tempted to embark on yet another military adventure, perhaps this time focusing his attention on the vulnerable Baltic states? I mean, America's transfixed. America's obsessed. Mr. Trump's sex life, it lets us avoid reality. Coughlin says it's all very well sniggering about the inadequacies of Russia's dilapidated aircraft carrier, but at least the Russians have one, which is more than we can say for our own Royal Navy, which is currently observing an enforced holiday in carrier strike capability as a result of the government's 2010 defense review. Here you see in the UK, just like in the United States, we're hollowing out our navies, our military. And Russia, meanwhile, well, they're sending in reinforcements to continue with the onslaught against the Syrian rebels. They're beefing up the Baltic fleet as well. This is from Reuters. Russia sharply upgrading the firepower of its Baltic fleet by adding warships armed with long-range cruise missiles. to counter NATO's buildup in the region, Russian media reported on Wednesday. And this comes at a time when NATO, of course, is understandably concerned about what's happening, pushing up against Eastern Europe's borders. Ukraine, now the Baltic states. Russian troops, they've moved near Russia's borders with Poland and Lithuania. And people in Europe are alarmed. This piece from Handelsblatt, this is a German publication. It says, afraid of an attack from Russia, NATO's moving a total of 4 combat organizations to Eastern Europe. 1,000 soldiers alone are sent to Lithuania. And so here NATO forces are having to build up just to counter Russia's movements. This from Die Welt, another German publication. Not only 600 soldiers, but combat tanks. The Bundeswehr will move several tanks of the type Leopard 2 to Lithuania. Germany will assume the leadership there. It says the decision is a clear signal that Germany's taking the concerns of the Eastern allies seriously. They're having to, because, well, the United States isn't going to be doing much. It's just been talk from this particular administration, whether with respect to Syria or to the Baltic states. I'll just play a clip here for you from President Obama. This is clip 2, by the way, but it's from President Obama speaking about the Baltic states and NATO's commitment to defend those newer members. This is from September of 2014.
And I say to the people of Estonia and the people of the Baltics, today we are bound by our treaty alliance. We have a solemn duty to each other. Article 5 is crystal clear. An attack on one is an attack on all. So if in such a moment you ever ask again who'll come to help, you'll know the answer. The NATO alliance, including the armed forces of the United States of America, right here, present now. We'll be here for Estonia, we will be here for Latvia, we will be here for Lithuania. You lost your independence once before. With NATO, you will never lose it again.
So that was President Obama's red line for the Baltic states. But having seen what's happened over the last few years, that's not the most reassuring statement to look back on, particularly as you see Russia now on the move in Ukraine, in Syria, having its naval fleet roll right through the English Channel. Going back to Germany's reaction, there's another report here, the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, that says now that 1 in 3 Germans fear war with Russia. They can see that it's coming. Europe is preparing for war, even as the United States fixates on an election, fixates on a horror show, to use Con Coughlin's words. And meanwhile, look at the reality of the world that we're living in. This report here from CNN says a Russian missile design company has unveiled the first image of a new weapon in Russia's arsenal, the Sarmat intercontinental ballistic missile, nicknamed Satan 2. Satan 1 came out, well, I think, in the 1970s. Well, here's the next version. You can poke fun at Russia's aircraft carrier if you like, but Russia is amassing ballistic missiles capable of destroying entire countries, as this report brings out. The RS-28 Sarmat rocket, it says, is capable of wiping out parts of the Earth the size of Texas or France. That's what this is capable of. NATO's been bolstering its defenses in countries along the Russian border amid growing concerns about Moscow's military direction. Europe's preparing for war. Russia's preparing for war. And look at this of the Russian missile, nicknamed Satan 2. I just pulled this clip from that CNN report. They had a little video embedded into it. But notice this exchange from CNN, clip one.
First pictures have been published of a new Russian intercontinental ballistic missile. Russia state media says the Satan 2, as it's called, could actually wipe out an area the size of Texas or France. So let's talk more about this with our senior international correspondent, Matthew Chance, who's joining us from Moscow. So, Matthew, what more do we know about this missile?
Well, it was commissioned back in 2010, so it's been a sort of very badly kept secret by the Russians. If the its military abilities are real, which is what everybody expects, which is then it's quite a formidable weapon, a very formidable weapon. It can hit any target on either side of the United States, for instance. It's powerful enough to destroy a country, a single missile the size of France. It can carry up to 15 warheads. It can evade missile defenses quite effectively as well. And so it's a pretty awesome sort of missile. But, I mean, hopefully it won't ever be used. But the real political value of this is that it shows that Russia is still a nuclear superpower, that it can still compete, it has parity with the United States when it comes to nuclear weapons. I think that's its main importance at the moment in Russia.
Well, hopefully it won't be used, he says there. That's a CNN exchange about this new Russian missile just from a couple of days ago. This new weapon in Russia's arsenal, nicknamed Satan II, so destructive, can wipe out an entire nation the size of France. The Daily Mail, this was in the Daily Mail, I think, yesterday or the day before. NATO squaring up against Putin. It says here, Russia's military escalation in Europe on Europe's border has triggered the West's biggest show of force in the region since the Cold War, as NATO continues to square up to Vladimir Putin. Have you seen much or read much about this in the United States press? Britain, it says, is to deploy troops, tanks, and jets to Estonia to deter Russian aggression, while UK and Romanian forces will also join a U.S. battalion in Poland. As part of the biggest military buildup in Eastern Europe since the Cold War, RAF planes are also being dispatched to patrol Romanian airspace for the first time. It says the moves are designed to stop Moscow taking over or undermining its former Eastern European satellites, as it has with Crimea and Ukraine. The U.S. is hoping for European nations to fill four battle groups of some 4,000 troops as part of NATO's response to Russia. Now, as we talked before concerning this election that is happening in the United States, well, there's not a lot of strong supports for NATO or strong statements of support for NATO, particularly coming from Donald Trump. But even President Obama, as we've played before, he's pulling back and he's telling NATO, look, you've got to pick up the slack. You've got to look after yourselves. It says here more troops will be sent to the Baltic states and eastern Poland early next year. They'll be backed by NATO's 40,000-strong Rapid Reaction Force. Now, before our break, a few weeks ago, we were talking about, well, it's in this latest issue of The Trumpet. The timeline for a European army. This is building to a war. It's building to world war. That's what makes so much of the history discussed in this latest Trumpet magazine so vital, so crucial. Put that history together with prophecy. And then with just what's happening, here we are fixated with so many trivial things. And look at the reality of the world that we're living in. It says France, this is the Daily Mail, France, Denmark, Italy, and other allies are expected to join the four battle groups led by the United States, Germany, Britain, and Canada to go to Poland, Lithuania, Estonia, and Latvia, with forces ranging from armored infantry to drones. And it says here, finally, it comes after Russia unveiled pictures of its largest ever nuclear missile, Satan II, which is capable of obliterating the UK. That's from the Daily Mail. Russia's out there flaunting its largest ever nuclear missile, capable of obliterating the UK, France. So this is Russia's strong reaction to NATO's expansion there in Eastern Europe. And all of this expansion, of course, comes at a time when NATO's military capabilities are declining, largely because of a weakening United States. But listen, there is going to be a resurgence militarily in Europe. And the blueprints are already being released. The timetable has been set. The buildup is beginning. And again, as all of this happens, well, look at the kinds of stories that receive coverage, particularly in the United States. As the Powerline blog wrote yesterday, the American news industry is a disgrace. Instead of serious coverage of the growing crisis in Europe and also in Syria, where Russia now has an aircraft carrier poised for action, and elsewhere, we get absurd daily updates on women to whom Donald Trump allegedly made a rude remark to 15 years ago. The incompetence, Powerline writes, the incompetence of our news media parallels the incompetence of the Obama administration. No surprise, since we're basically talking about the same people. It's just all politics. It's just all the agenda. We have to get across the agenda. We have to back and support the agenda. It has to fit within our political sphere, or else, well, we're just not going to cover it. And so we're able to avoid reality, or to continue on avoiding reality for a little while longer. And yet, as this recent issue of the trumpet brings out, look at how fast. I mean, in the case of France, there early on in World War II, it took 6 weeks. 6 weeks for France to collapse. There are danger signs, alarm bells. They're going off all around us. And that's why the Trumpet magazine, and of course the Trumpet website, they're essential to your daily diet, to your daily educational diet, prophecy, history. It really does. The Trumpet magazine, I mean, it really does highlight what is significant and what is important from a prophetic standpoint. If you aren't a subscriber, make sure that you go to thetrumpet.com, our website, and subscribe to that magazine today. When we come back, we'll go through some of the emails that have come in these past few days, and then also continue on with some of the things I talked about. I believe it was on Tuesday's program, that one on crying aloud and sparing not. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to email the program. You can do that this weekend by sending your comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. World War III is closer than you think. Terrorism and economic crisis is tearing Europe apart. The only nation that can lead Europe out of the mess is Germany. But Germany can't do it without a strong leader. Bible prophecy says they will get one. He will unite Europe in a new Holy Roman Empire. But it won't stop there. Every time Europe unites, war breaks out. Find out how it will happen again, one last time. Request a free copy of The Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy. What will the Holy Roman Empire do
after it has stopped terrorism and saved Europe's economy? This book will tell you. You'll be shocked at how much it will affect your future. Act today. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
A few comments here coming in from some of you listeners over the last few days. This one here in response to Tuesday's program on Cry Aloud and Spare Not. It says here, it's awesome to hear Mr. Armstrong and how God blessed his end time Elijah as he grew in godly obedience. God's gift of revelation being given freely and made available to a world in such desperate need. This is an awesome privilege to support his work. It says, thank you for expounding on this vital truth about our need to give freely and making it clear that we need to depend solely on the Eternal for all our needs. How vital that role is for you, the listener or the reader of the Trumpet magazine, to get behind and to support this work so that this world could receive the truth, so that it might be given freely and made available to a world in such desperate need as this listener wrote. Here we send out the Trumpet magazine every single month. No subscription price to attach to it, no cost, no obligation, no follow-up even. Just a little slip along with it every year, I guess, that asks if the reader is interested in renewing. That's it. Just wanting to make sure that they're interested, that they want it, that they're going through it. Outside of that, I mean, it's offered free of charge to readers, anyone who's concerned about the truth, who wants to wake up to reality as the rest of the world fixates on trivialities. Another response here, also coming after that program, Cry Aloud and Spare Not. It says here, good message today. Good to hear you are back in the saddle. That was the first program coming back from a week and a half off. This one here, in response to Wednesday's show, The Coming World Government, it says here, another thank you for today's show. This flowed so perfectly in my understanding this time around that I had to share with some of those closest to my heart. It says, it is such an overwhelming plan. You portrayed it so clearly. Surely, they will at least take a deep breath and say, wow, wait a minute. What did he say? Really excellent, it says. More and more clarity. That in response to The Coming World Government, Wednesday's program. This one here comes from Texas. It says, thank you and all those that work so hard to get the message of God out. Your segments are a highlight in my day. I see how God's Spirit is working in His chosen people, and it's truly incredible and spiritually inspiring. Another one here in response to Tuesday's show. Thank you for yet another round of TDR shows to come. We'll continue to listen however and wherever possible. Writing all these little stanzas on the run, which turn out to be a lot sometimes by the time I've fully contemplated what all is said. Always striving to match the strong urgency I feel from all this as it sets my mind and heart on fire with words just as strong and to be accurate as possible with those expressions. It says here, finally, the truth, as we know it is this day, is something that can make one laugh and cry simultaneously. And it's better to convert these things into words than emotional displays and stamping on the ground and shaking the head like a dumb cow. It says, but please do not begin to preach us smooth things. Bless our God of the two-edged sword, even as it may make our characters appear bloody, as bloody they are. That comes, I'm not sure where that came from exactly, but it was in response to Cry Aloud and Spare Not. This next one here, in response to Brent Noctegal's show from yesterday. It seems the team is in perfect unity. Mr. Noctegal presents very professionally and is very easy to follow and understand because of his familiarity with Jerusalem, its environs, all the names and the people. It says the subject matter is always very interesting. That in response to yesterday's show, the UN's attempt to erase 1,000 years of Jewish history in Jerusalem. Another one here coming in from Florida. Says, I look forward to your return to the Trumpadaily on Friday. I pray you and your family are well. It says, the short time remaining, there is still so much to be done. With the cost of living going up every week, the work needs the extra finances to feed the ever-growing needs. This world has got to be told their nation's governments are going to fail, and the government of God will bring the joy that all people need. And then this last one, an interesting one here from Indiana. She gives us a little bit of a, well, her history with God's work and with God's truth coming over the airwaves on radio. She says, I was raised a Catholic and had never heard of Mr. Herbert Armstrong. While in college, I met a young man who introduced me to Mr. Armstrong with a Plain Truth magazine. She says he gave all the girls he dated a copy of the Plain Truth, figuring if they thought it was of interest, they must be intelligent. I was very interested, she says. Read it through the night he gave it to me and asked him the next day if he had any more. He gave me the 3 years' worth that he had, and I read through every one of them while we were going to summer school and dating. Most of our dates were spent listening to the World Tomorrow broadcast on the radio. In those days, 1968, We could tune the radio to a different station every half hour and pick up Mr. Armstrong. Not near as many distractions back then, you see. 1968, as Mr. Armstrong's program, I mean, it just flooded the airwaves. And as she says here, I mean, she could pick it up every half hour, it seemed. Satan has certainly bombarded us with all kinds of distractions to fixate on, so that we avoid reality. Well, she says that's exactly what we did. In other words, we listened to the program over and again. She writes, after we were married, one of our first purchases was a good Magnavox cabinet radio so that we could continue listening to The World Tomorrow. Finally, she writes, we're thrilled with the introduction of KPCG. It brought back many dear and wonderful memories, and we're so happy to have access to it any time of the day or night. It's another way that God is binding his family ever closer. Well, it is a powerful tool, but there's just, compared to 1968, to make the point that she did in her email, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of other things that are stealing away our time and focus. Consider those pieces I read in the first segment. The Glenn Reynolds piece at the USA Today, and then what Con Coughlin wrote. So many in this world are just completely in the dark, clueless as to what's happening, doing anything and everything to avoid reality. Does this world need the trumpet of alarm? Cry aloud and spare not, Isaiah 58:1. We went through that on Tuesday's show and went through some of that history from the autobiography where Mr. Armstrong said that once I came to solely rely upon God, then I was free. I was free to sound the alarm, to warn this world in love, to fulfill that mission in Isaiah 58:1. I didn't read this particular quote, also from the autobiography, from some of that same material about solely relying on God. Mr. Armstrong wrote, never was a more important decision made than that decision to cut loose entirely from relying on men and instead relying solely on God, not only for truth and for direction, but also for support. That's why we never solicit the public for contributions. And then he says here very quickly after that decision, that's when he decided, okay, I'm not going to be paid by the Oregon Conference anymore. Not if they're going to force me to adopt policies that aren't even biblical. Well, as soon as he decided that, to go it alone, so to speak, relying solely on God, then God started opening doors. He says very small ones at first, then additional small ones, then a big door, and more of them. It says here, and to finance what he opened before me, he added slowly, gradually, but consistently to the little family of co-workers who voluntarily wanted to have a part in God's work, in changing hearts, changing human nature, preparing for Christ's coming to change and save the world. He says, but I could not invite people to become co-workers. I could welcome them with gratitude when God caused them voluntarily to become co-workers with Christ, but until they took the initiative, I could not ask them. He says, no other activity on earth is operated like this, and perhaps none has grown so surely. You know the history, some of you, about the growth of that work. 30% growth per year, operating on this foundational premise, trusting solely on God, that God would cause co-workers, members with Christ, to voluntarily support this effort. Well, that's how it's funded. People coming along into this and learning principles like what's covered in Acts 20. We'll go through a few verses here as we have time for it. These principles of Scripture, like I covered on Tuesday, freely you've received, freely give. Practicing the way of give. Practicing the way of God's love. The way of outflowing concern for the good and welfare of others. Here in Acts 20, Paul is talking to a group of ministers. And he's telling them, look, I've set an example for you. Now make sure that you follow in my steps. Acts 20, verse 20 says, and how I kept back nothing that was profitable unto you, but have showed you and have taught you publicly and from house to house. I mean, Paul kept nothing back from them. He showed them. He showed these ministers how to be a success spiritually. Verse 22, and now behold, I'm going to Jerusalem, bound in the Spirit, not knowing what shall befall me there, except that the Holy Spirit testifies to me in every city that imprisonment and afflictions await me. I mean, he knew he was going to be facing persecution. And so these were his parting words to these elders, these ministers in Ephesus. Verse 24, it says, but none of these things move me, neither count I my life dear unto myself, so that I might finish my course with joy and the ministry which I've received of the eternal Jesus to testify the gospel of the grace of God. And now behold, I know that you all among whom I have gone preaching the kingdom of God shall see my face no more. He wasn't going to see these people again. And so what did he pass on to them? What message, what urgent message did he give to them? Verse 26 says, wherefore I take you to record this day that I am pure from the blood of all men, for I have not shunned to declare unto you all the counsel of God. Take heed, verse 28 says, take heed therefore unto yourselves and to all the flock over the which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers to feed the church of God, which he has purchased with his own blood. This is dangerous knowledge, in other words. Here's Paul reminding these ministers that Jesus Christ had purchased the church of God, these brethren that were in these congregations. The ministers had an obligation to get out there and to feed, to give, and to teach the brethren how to give. Well, Satan hates this work. He hates the way of give. He hates God's principle of love. Verse 29, Paul says, for I know this, that after my departing shall grievous wolves enter into the flock among you, not sparing the flock. There's going to be attacks. There's going to be wolves coming right into you, right into the flock, And he says to these ministers, also of your own selves shall men arise, speaking perverse things, to draw away disciples after them. You see, even ministers within the church of God would go bad, would stop practicing the way of unselfish giving, and who would instead try to get for themselves their own congregations, relying on men instead of on God. Verse 31 says, therefore, watch and remember that by the space of 3 years I ceased not to warn everyone night and day with tears. You remember what I did for 3 years. Remember the example that I set. Remember all of the warnings I delivered. Paul says to them, really, it sounds a lot, what he says here, it sounds a lot like what Mr. Armstrong, Herbert Armstrong, said late in his life, just months before he died, in fact, that there were those who wanted to come back and take over the church, that there were those like vultures waiting for him to die. Verse 34, Paul says, yes, you yourselves know that these hands have ministered unto my necessities and to them that were with me. He provided for himself. I mean, he worked in the ministry and then some. And then verse 35, a memory verse here, it says, I've shown you in every way by laboring like this that you must support the weak. And remember this. Remember the words of the Lord Jesus, that he said, it's more blessed to give than to receive. See, practice the way of give. Practice the way of give. Freely you have received, freely give. Give the trumpet. Give the booklets. Give Mr. Armstrong's works. Give Mr. Armstrong's books to as many people as possible, the largest audience possible. Paul's life was a living example of the way a Christian is supposed to live. Live the way of give. Herbert Armstrong's life, his was a living example as well. Out there living the way of give. Well, we send all of that literature out, as I said, without charging subscription fees or costs for the booklets and such. We go on television. We don't make these emotional appeals for money. And yet all of these efforts, producing programs like this or building websites or printing literature or sending out magazines month by month, it does cost money, obviously. God is behind it, though. And that work, as it goes out, is made possible through the tithes and the offerings and the prayerful support of those faithful co-workers and members who come along and support that work voluntarily. And so here God's work is, not asking not asking the public for contributions. Instead, just getting out there and giving and fulfilling that mission. In Isaiah 58 in verse 1, and other passages as well, Ezekiel 33, Amos chapter 2 and 3. Sound the alarm, blow the trumpet. I mean, who can but prophesy, Amos said. Look at what's happening, look at the reality of the world today. God has commanded us to proclaim his warning message, his warning witness. Message of love to this world. And we can't charge for it because God's given us the command to give that gospel to the world. To give it to the largest audience possible. And so that places the financial responsibility of furthering this gospel work on those who come along and who understand this principle the principle that is behind this worldwide work, this worldwide effort. People who understand that if they come along and support this work with everything that they can, that God will then, in turn, prosper them for it. Because as it says here in this message that Paul gave to these ministers in Ephesus, Jesus' teaching is that you're more blessed when you're out there giving than when you're trying to take or to receive for yourself. We can't outgive God. The more we give, the more God will give to us. That's a law. That's a law, and it's grounded right here in Scripture, in verses just like this one, Acts 20 and verse 35. Commit that one to memory. That's a principle on which really the entire work of God is established. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. It hardly seems possible that we've completed another week of broadcasting. It's already Friday. We'll look forward to another week next week. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for joining us this week. And we'll see you tomorrow.